A matter of State versus Cornelius Cohen. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Your Honors. Raymond Hamlet from the firm of Hunt Hamlet on behalf of Cornelius Cohen.
Good morning, Your Honors. Austin Howard, Assistant Deputy Public Defender, on behalf of the Office of the Public Defender, as amicus curiae.
Good morning, Alexander Shalom from the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey, as a friend of the court.
Good morning, Bill McGuire, on behalf of the Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers of New Jersey.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deputy Attorney General Sarah C. Hunt, on behalf of the state.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome. Justice Solomon may participate in this matter by watching the video. Mr. Hamlet, please go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. Our courts have long since recognized that the smell of marijuana itself is probable cause, it constitutes probable cause that criminal activity may be afoot. The significance of this case, the Cohen case, is to determine whether or not the reasonableness of the scope of the officer's observations or based on the officer's observations were enough to extend beyond the interior of the motor vehicle and into other areas of the vehicle, including, in this instance, the hood of the vehicle and the trunk of the vehicle, but more specifically, the hood of the vehicle. Our position is that the trial court and the appellate division, that they got it wrong in terms of allowing the scope to extend beyond the interior because there was nothing more than observations of the officer that stopped Mr. Cohen's car about the smell of raw marijuana emanating from the interior of the vehicle. And the fact of the matter is that the officer utilized nothing more than experience to justify extending the search beyond the interior of the vehicle. And I say nothing more than experience. Unlike the Kalon case where there's other indicia or where there was other indicia of an investigation that revealed other evidence of potential criminal activity, including the acknowledgement by the driver of the vehicle that he had smoked marijuana. That is not the case here. There were no other investigative tools that were utilized by law enforcement to determine whether or not the search should extend beyond the interior, which is exactly what the officer said the smell of raw marijuana came from. There was never any determination as to whether or not the smell of raw marijuana was coming, for example, underneath the seats. The officers didn't indicate, or officer didn't indicate that he made that kind of investigation, or that the officer actually observed something beyond what would be characterized as personal use. The officer, if the court indicated that the officer was credible, but the officer's observations were allegedly shake in Mr. Cohen's beard, which is indicative, if that is to believe, of personal use. The officer indicated that there were multiple air fresheners that were used to mask, often used to mask the smell of marijuana, in addition to a keychain that said, I got high in South Beach or something to that effect. That in and of itself were just observations. And those observations were indicative of personal use. Clearly, if someone, as the officer indicated, had shaken their beard, that's personal use. There was nothing else that would have led the officer to extend the search beyond the interior. It stretches the imagination to some extent that the officer would be permitted to say that this is a place where marijuana could be stored. This is a place where you could find marijuana without anything more. Our position is law enforcement needed more to extend beyond that, the smell of raw marijuana. And the mere fact of those three observations did not lend itself that there was additional criminal activity afoot. For example, that someone was involved in the potential distribution of marijuana, that the smell in and of itself was so overwhelming that it appeared from the officer to be able to be smelled from the trunk, that it appeared from the officer that they were able to smell marijuana, raw marijuana, from the hood without even opening it, without even opening the trunk. None of that was present in this case. There was no other indicia. There weren't like scales found in the car or plastic baggies that one might have in a motor vehicle if you are transporting marijuana. And this is not to be lost on the fact that the entire scope, the entire circumstances that brought Trooper Travis to Mr. Cohen was based on a bolo that had nothing to do with marijuana. That was admitted by Trooper Cohen. Trooper Travis. So in terms of whether or not the scope was reasonable, the scope wasn't reasonable because there was nothing else other than by the trooper himself, the smell of marijuana in the interior. He was very specific that he smelled marijuana in the interior of the vehicle and raw marijuana. One could argue if, in fact, Mr. Cohen had smoked marijuana, although he denied it, having shaken the beard would be indicative of that. That's personal use. That's personal use that wouldn't extend to any other area of the car. And whether this is to be believed or not, our position, quite frankly, is law enforcement is trained. They're trained to detect the smell of marijuana and to identify and differentiate, if you will, the difference between burnt and raw. And I don't think it is lost, it's certainly not lost on me, that the smell of burnt marijuana more than likely lends itself to someone who had just used marijuana versus the smell of raw marijuana, which could suggest that you may be transporting that. Law enforcement knows that. That's part of their training. And in this instance, if you equate the bolo to now the smell of marijuana, both occupants of the vehicle, after they were removed from the vehicle, were placed in handcuffs. The appellate division acknowledges that they were placed under arrest. If they were placed under arrest, there's no concern for the safety of the officers. There was certainly more than one officer. There were numerous officers that were present. The safety issue was out of the window. They're in handcuffs.
Mr. Hanlon, what should the standard be for when police might be permitted to search beyond the interior of the car?
Someone coughed, so I didn't hear that.
When can the police extend the search beyond the interior? What should the standard be?
The standard should be based on the officer's observations. That if there's some indicia, for example, in the Kalon case, there was something else. There was an admission, number one. Number two, there was information or evidence in the rear of the vehicle. I believe it was baggies and a container that the officer said the smell was too great to be in that little container. And the officer continued with the investigation to try to figure out and determine where that smell was coming from.
But in Kalon, didn't that all add up to there was a smell of raw marijuana that the officer, based on his search of the interior passenger compartment of the vehicle, including seeing that, I think there was like a small suitcase in the back seat, knew the marijuana could not be coming from that, but he still smells raw marijuana, and the court held that that led to probable cause to search the trunk. How is that different from this case where the officers searched the passenger compartment and there was nothing there, but they still smelled raw marijuana? Why does that not then lead to probable cause to search the trunk?
Well, in this case, the officer indicated that he smelled marijuana in the interior. What you just indicated was the officer in Kalon went to the rear of the vehicle and made an assessment as to whether or not what was in the rear of the vehicle was the source or would be the source of the smell of raw marijuana. In this instance, it was a wholesale, I smell raw marijuana and nothing else. The officer didn't get into the vehicle and sniff around in different parts of the vehicle to ascertain whether or not marijuana smell was coming from underneath the seat, whether or not the marijuana smell was coming from somewhere behind the passenger seat or the driver's seat, whether it was coming from the dashboard, whether it was coming from somewhere outside of the vehicle. The officer only utilized the training that suggested this shake in his beard the multiple air fresheners, and the keychain is enough for me now to extend this search somewhere else, because what I'm smelling could be coming from this particular area or could be coming from that particular area, as opposed to actually making an affirmative step to determine whether or not it was.
But in Kalon, there was no testimony that the officer smelled it coming from the trunk. It was just that he knew it couldn't be coming from the passenger compartment because it couldn't have been coming from that small suitcase, and there was nothing else in the passenger compartment that looked like raw marijuana. So in this case, even though there was no small suitcase in the back seat, the officer knew that it couldn't have been coming from the passenger compartment because he searched the passenger compartment and there was no raw marijuana there. So how is that different? It's just the smell of raw marijuana and an inability to find it in the passenger compartment.
I still believe that the difference is that the officer in Kalon actually took affirmative steps. And while it may not have revealed what the officer was looking for at the moment, the officer did continue an investigation into the rear of the vehicle and came to the conclusion that smelling this small case did not dissipate the smell of the raw marijuana. So now I'm going another step. I'm going to look in another area to determine whether or not the smell is coming from that area, is emanating from that area. And the other issue is, in this instance, that the officers went to the hood of the vehicle, which is not commonly used to store things.
So what's the level of privacy interest in the hood? Because after all, someone could have a breakdown on the roadside, and, you know, a police officer could come by and there might be the need for assistance. And you don't normally store personal effects in the under the hood as contrasted with the trunk, for example. So how strong is the privacy interest in that part of a vehicle commonly?
I think it's twofold. And I'm glad that Your Honor asked that question. One, if officers are permitted to go and potentially impact the structural integrity of the interior of the hood, let's say, of a motor vehicle, they go, they start removing wires or moving items in the interior of the hood portion of the car that could affect the operability of the car. There's a whole host of things. But more importantly, and I thought about this earlier, cars are changing. There are electric cars that don't have engine compartments, but rather have compartments where you store items, just like you would store items in your trunk. So if there's a wholesale desire to allow the search of a hood because there's less expectation of privacy, that's not really consistent with where the world is going. And consistent with those compartments that now exist, where there is no hood as we know it, no engine as we know it. It's just a space that's consistent with the trunk, which would have the same level of expectation of privacy.
So the officer gave an additional reason, said that marijuana can fit in the engine compartment, and he testified will get sucked into the air vents. Was there any basis that he provided for that conclusion?
None.
Was it probed at all?
There was none. It wasn't probed. In fact, there may have been a question that was predicated on experience, and that could be the rationale for looking in the hood. And my recollection is there was an objection, and the officer wasn't permitted to testify to that because the question was, what did you do? There was no indication that the officer said, I turned on the air vents, had access to the keys, and when I turned it on, that smell got stronger. That's what led me to the hood. It was just, it could be in the hood. Well, it could have been in the wheel well, but there was no indication that the officer tried to search there.
Counsel, I have two questions. And the first deals with the first question that the chief asked you, and that is, what should the standard be to search beyond the interior of the car? And my question is your argument that the standard should be the scope of the search must be objectively reasonable, and tied to that part of the vehicle that may conceal the object of the search. Is that the standard that you're advocating?
It is, Your Honor.
Okay. The second question I have, and I believe the trial judge found that when the trooper located the shell casings in the compartment, the glove compartment, that provided a basis to search the entire vehicle for weapons.
That's an interesting issue. Trooper Travis and no one else indicated that the smell was emanating from the glove compartment at all. And the fact that they opened the glove compartment in and of itself, I don't think it's consistent with their observations, but be that as it may. If, in fact, there's a determination that the spent shell casing was sufficient to justify an entire search of the car outside of the marijuana, then the officers had information that there was allegedly going to be a vehicle traveling with firearms.
Right. That brings me to the heart of the reason for my second question, and that is whether probable cause was spontaneous and unforeseeable in terms of the expectation that they would locate weapons in the vehicle.
It was not spontaneous.
Right, because
it was pre-planned. You know, it was pre-planned because there was a bolo.
Right.
Trooper Travis, the only reason he stopped the vehicle or started following the vehicle was because of the bolo.
But that's not before the court. That's
correct.
That's not part of the cert grant.
Correct.
Notwithstanding the issue with regarding whether it was spontaneous or unforeseeable, isn't this case similar to Patino?
Similar in what sense?
Well, you tell me. What is your argument with regard to Patino in relation to this case?
Essentially that the spontaneity as it relates to the search in Patino?
The probable cause to search, for the search to go beyond the scope of the interior of the vehicle.
If, in fact, the observations of the officer suggested, in my estimation, that there was more criminal activity beyond personal use, if it's just personal use, that's not a basis to extend the search. And that's what existed here, similar to in Patino. And because of that, the scope extending beyond personal use wasn't justified.
So that wouldn't be consistent with Patino.
Yes.
Because in Patino, the court held that the search must be tailored to the area where the probable cause and where the search is emanating from. And standing alone, just the smell does not allow the search to go into the hood or the trunk or areas where that smell is not emanating from.
Correct.
But haven't courts held that there's a difference between a smell of raw versus burnt marijuana? And I think you already mentioned this, with the idea being that a smell of burnt marijuana could indicate personal use, but a smell of raw marijuana could indicate that the car is being used to transport large quantities of marijuana. So isn't there a difference in cases that are about the smell of raw versus burnt marijuana?
There is a difference, and there could potentially be a difference as long as you're able to determine that this potential difference is justified beyond the interior of the vehicle. And as I've indicated, all signs pointed to personal use. All signs pointed to personal use. So if all signs pointed to personal use and nothing more, notwithstanding the fact that nothing was ever found in the car, but be that as it may, if it doesn't point to anything more than personal use, There shouldn't be a permissible avenue to allow officers to extend the search to any potential area of the motor vehicle, which is what could happen.
So are you specifically arguing that if the officers smell raw instead of burnt marijuana, but all other indicators are of personal use, then the search must be confined to the passenger compartment?
Absolutely.
So the officer here said he smelled a strong odor of marijuana. And yet, of course, we know that there was no marijuana. No marijuana was found. Do we know from the record how long a smell can remain in a vehicle after marijuana is taken?
I don't think that was viewed or it wasn't explored in the record below. And I wouldn't know. And the officer never testified how long that smell would remain.
Would you care to comment on the argument that some amici have advanced that permitting searches based on smell alone can have dramatic consequences?
Yes. So I don't think it's lost on anyone that the smell of marijuana in the past has been utilized to justify searches, and there were disproportionate levels of conviction for people of color. The fact that the smell in and of itself could be utilized to justify the searches, that's subjective. And if it's subjective, then it lends itself for the potential for abuse, because there are numerous instances where there's the alleged smell of marijuana, nothing was found, but there's other indicia that resulted in someone being charged. We need to eliminate, and I know the criminal law, that may not necessarily be what we're here for, tries to eliminate that, but if there's a wholesale officers, you smell marijuana, you're permitted to follow your instincts anywhere without anything more. That lends itself, in my estimation, to the potential for abuses to continue to exist, which we clearly would like to end.
So that's why I asked about lingering smell. Is it possible that an officer in good faith testifies, I smell a strong odor of marijuana when there is actually no marijuana in the car because it might have been there recently? Do we know at all?
That's fair. I don't have any data on that, but that's still, even though an officer says it's a lingering smell of marijuana, I still submit that there would have to be more than just that subjective lingering smell of raw marijuana, and I'm going to look until I find it. And interestingly enough, whether this is something that's before your honors or not, once what was discovered in the hood was discovered, that was the end of the marijuana, raw marijuana smell in the inquiry. That was it.
The motion judge struggled with this and noted in his comments on the record before he made his decision that there is a real difficulty as a defense attorney to be able to cross-examine an officer effectively when the officer attests that I smelled raw marijuana. How do you prove the negative is what the judge mused about, but yet ultimately said that I found the officer credible, right? And applying our traditional standards of appellate review, credibility findings deserve a lot of deference, right? So how do we deal with that phenomena that the motion judge identified, given the ultimate finding of credibility that he made?
I struggled with the court making that assessment, given the fact that nothing was identified. And one can always say, I could say right now, I said, smell the odor of raw marijuana in the chambers. Everyone would look at me like I'm crazy. But if I said I smelled it.
We're streaming out of the room right now.
Not it's legal, who knows?
You're talking about Judge Sabatino's chambers?
That's on the fifth floor.
Fifth floor. Air vents.
That's right.
Quite possible. It lends itself to abuses, because if you say it, it suggests that must mean it. That's the case. It must be because you smell it, and it's so difficult, without anything more, to rationalize how that was even possible, when quite frankly you have occupants who say, "I don't smoke marijuana." There was no physical evidence of this alleged shake. There's nothing else that supported that. And quite frankly, while this may be something that your honors don't want to hear, I've been in cases where officers said they smelled marijuana. It was tested. There was no marijuana. So it begs the question, what was the officer smelling, if smelling at all?
Well, are you suggesting we should not, I'm sorry, just following up quickly, we should not sustain such credibility findings unless there's some independent basis beyond the assertion of the officer to substantiate what the officer claimed to have smelled?
That would be my position, absolutely.
But aren't we getting into the realm of we find out what was found and then we go back from there, and we generally don't do that, right? We don't say the weapon was either found or not found when we're evaluating the reasonableness of a search that ultimately generated the weapon.
Correct. But this is special in my estimation. It's special because of the acknowledgement of how marijuana was utilized to negatively impact people. So in this instance, when you're talking about marijuana, yeah, it matters because there's a special carve out for marijuana.
Go ahead. No. Ultimately, the state would rely on that kind of evidence much more than the defendant, because it's the state is defending a motion to suppress in which something was found in the ordinary course. You still would like to see a carve-out based on this, in which the ultimate decision is influenced on as to what was ultimately found or not found?
Well, I think that's a credibility question. And the courts can determine credibility in the sense that if an officer indicated that there was a smell and it was so overpowering, there should be some evidence of it through your search. Or at a minimum, some explanation that I searched all areas of the car looking for this smell of marijuana. As I indicated in the Cohen case, it stopped.
To follow up on Judge Sabatino's line of questioning, although we afford deference to the trial court's factual findings, the legal conclusions that are drawn from those factual findings are reviewed by the appellate courts de novo. So we could still look at the totality of the circumstances and determine that, legally, the scope of the search went beyond what was proper in this case.
Yes, absolutely.
We do know that there were two officers, and both of them smelled it.
There was another officer that said, I smell marijuana. Didn't say from where he smelled it. And to be fair, all those officers came as a result of the other issue.
Mr. Hammer, how do we treat a case like this where an officer in good faith testifies, I smelled marijuana. I did a thorough search of the interior and I found nothing. And we know later from a search of the trunk that there were 10 to 20 pounds there, not enough like in Guerra, so that the trunk was sitting low, but a sufficient quantity that would have justified and backed up the testimony that they smelled marijuana. Is that search lawful under the standard that you're positing?
Justice, all I can say is if there's nothing else, if the officer goes outside and sniffs the trunk and smells that the smell is coming from the trunk, potentially. If the officer goes into the hood area and sniffs around and the pinpointed that the smell could be coming from there, potentially. But not, I smell it in the interior. And now I'm just going to start searching other places because it could be in these other places. Not that my investigation is leading me to these other places.
I thought that I had heard you say previously that here the officer did not do a thorough search of the interior and just immediately jumped to the hood and the trunk, and then the search stopped after he found the weapons. But I thought that I had seen from the transcript that there was a search of the interior, meaning that the officer saw that there was no large quantity of raw marijuana in the interior of the passenger compartment before going to the trunk or the hood. Are you saying that there was no, that there was something else the officer should have done in the interior of the car first, in the passenger compartment?
There's nothing in the record that I can recall where the officer indicated, I opened up the rear doors of the vehicle. I went underneath the front passenger seat with my flashlight, smelled around, didn't smell anything. I went to the passenger side, in the rear, went underneath the car. I went to the side panels, smelled the side panels. I pulled down the middle console thing in the vehicle to see if there was any smell from coming from there. Nothing. It was literally just, I smell it in the interior. Now I'm going to search around because it could be somewhere in the trunk. It could be in the wheel well. It could be in the hood.
Other questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add?
No, Your Honors. I thank you for allowing me to have this opportunity to argue before you.
Thank you. Mr. Howard.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. The Office of the Public Defender urges this court to hold that the generalized odor of marijuana standing alone does not give police a blank check to search the entirety of a car from head to tails. And instead, this court should reaffirm that probable cause requires one of two things. Either the odor itself must emanate from the place to be searched, or if the officers aren't able to identify the source of the odor, there must be additional facts under the totality of the circumstances that do point to the trunk or the hood. And I'd like to make two points.
Sorry, on the what? On the what did you say? There must be additional findings as to what?
There must be additional facts if the officer can't locate the source of the odor. There must be additional facts under the totality of the circumstances that do point to a search of the trunk or a search of the hood. And my two points, the first is that, you know, I don't think the rule that we're proposing is new. It's the consensus of the state's case law as it stands. And the second is that, you know, I don't think we're asking much of officers on the scene to make the minimal amount of observations about where an odor is coming from to justify their search before they expand the search and invade the privacy of a closed trunk or hood compartment. And I would just like to begin with what the officers did here and what they should have done based on the case law. And so, you know, it's undisputed Trooper Travis smelled the odor emanating from the interior or passenger compartment of the Honda Civic. And that permitted him to search the interior. But after not finding any marijuana, he expanded the search to the hood and to the trunk without making any additional observations about where the odor was coming from. And I think that's where he went wrong based on the case law. For example, he didn't, you know, smell near the rear of the car or near the hood to see whether the odor grew stronger near the rear and whether it was emanating from the rear, as in Rodriguez and as in Kalon. He, you know, Mr. Chief Justice, to your point, he speculated that the odor might be coming through the vent, but he didn't actually make any observations by, you know, smelling the vent to see if the odor grew stronger through the vent. That might have pointed, or would have pointed, to the hood and created probable cause. And he testified that there was marijuana shake or vegetation on the defendant's beard and shirt, but he didn't explain how he ruled that out as the source of the odor. Similarly, you know, he didn't call for a canine. I think, you know, there was certainly the odor persisting in the interior would have been reason to prolong the stop to call for a canine, and a canine sniff, an alert, you know, toward the rear or toward the hood, I think would be enough for probable cause to search those areas. Trooper Travis here didn't even ask for consent, which is a routine, you know, police investigative tactic. So I think the point is that there were no, you know, observations about what the police did here on the scene, about where the odor was coming from, but there was also nothing more that pointed to the trunk or the hood. For example, the rear wasn't sagging low, as in Guerra. There was no, you know, tip that marijuana had been placed in the trunk of the hood, as in McCarthy. There was no admission that there was a suspicious bag in the trunk, as in Lettman. And so there were no observations about where the odor was coming from, and there was nothing more. And I think the case law makes clear that, you know, since Patino, this court has reaffirmed that probable cause for the interior does not automatically create probable cause for the trunk, that the probable cause must be specific to the place to be searched. And I think that point is undisputed. I think even the state on page 23 of the state's supplemental brief, you know, the state agrees that they needed probable cause specific to the trunk. And I think in the context of an odor, what that means from the case law is that either the odor itself emanates from the place to be searched, like in Rodriguez and like in Kalon, or there are additional facts, like in Guerra, where the rear was sagging low. And I think, Justice Wehner, after to your point about, you know, Kalon, I do think the officers there did more than simply rule out that it wasn't in the interior. In Kalon, this is 336 of the Kalon opinion. The court, you know, makes clear that the officer, quote, returned to defendant's vehicle to determine the area from which the odor of marijuana had emanated. And then in its analysis, the court stated, and this is on page 338, quote, it appeared to emanate from the rear of the vehicle. So I think that's what makes Kalon different than this case, is that the officer did more in Kalon, and the odor did appear to emanate from the rear. And I think...
So if the officer in this case had said just that, I walked around to the back of the car, I smelled, and it appeared to emanate from there, would there be a problem with the search?
I think that would be enough, Your Honor. I think if the officer does make those observations and smells the odor growing stronger toward the rear, like in Rodriguez and like in Kalon, I think that our case law has made clear that that is enough for probable cause. But it must be specific to the area. And I think, you know, State versus Judge and State versus Estalos, I think, show that if it's just a generalized odor, simply not finding it in the interior does not permit an expansive search to the trunk or the hood. And in State versus Judge, I think the court was clear that that search of the trunk was only upheld on the basis of consent. And the court, I think, was careful to point out, and this is page 201 of the judge opinion, talking about what the odor of marijuana creates. And the court states, quote, the suspected marijuana could reasonably have been located in the passenger compartment and or on the person of the occupants of the vehicle. And so not the trunk, Your Honors. And I think in Estalos, there was an odor from the interior, and yet the court suppressed the evidence in the trunk. And, you know, this court in Patino relied heavily on Estalos. So I think that the case law, you know, the thread running through these cases is that the trunk is separate and requires specific probable cause, and that the police can search a trunk, but they need, you know, probable cause in the form of the odor emanating from there or additional facts under the totality that do point to that place to be searched. And I just like to, and I think, you know, Mr. Chief Justice, you raised the point about lingering. And I do think that lingering is relevant to this case because, you know, after initially searching the interior and not finding the odor there, the possible explanation for why, excuse me, not finding marijuana there, the probable explanation is because it's not that it must be in the trunk or must be in the hood, but odors linger. And we know the odors linger because the facts of this case demonstrate it. The Trooper Travis, who the trial court found credible, testified that he smelled a strong odor coming from the interior. And yet, you know, the police searched the car inside and out and found no marijuana. And so we know the odors can linger. And I think more than that, Travis actually testified that this happens in many cases. So this is from the March 1st, 2018 transcript, page 93, and it's lines 1 to 17. And this is redirect where the prosecutor is asking him, you know, why would this happen? And Trooper Travis explains, the smell lingers in the motor vehicle. And he goes on to say, quote, I've searched many vehicles and not find marijuana. And he goes on to say, you know, he goes on to suggest possibilities, reasons to explain it. He says that the car could have had a trap, that he didn't discover it. On page 6 of the trial court's opinion, the trial court said, you know, that the MVR shows Trooper Travis saying after not finding the marijuana, maybe the defendant had the marijuana in the car earlier. And so I think that's the point, is that the lingering after not finding, in the first instance, there's probable cause because it's reasonable to conclude, you know, that the odor is suggestive that marijuana will be found in the interior. But after not finding it, it's no longer the case that it's probably in the hood or that there's a fair probability in the trunk because odors linger, and that's the possible alternate explanation. And sorry, just one moment, Your Honors. And I do think, you know, just to address Justice Wehner Apter's question about the raw versus burnt marijuana, I do think, you know, under the totality, there can be a distinction. You know, I do think burnt, you know, suggests reasonably that it has been used more recently, but I still think that under the totality, you still need facts that point specifically to the trunk or specifically to the hood to justify those searches.
as part of that analysis, whether or not there's raw marijuana might be potentially leading to a suspicion that there is distribution?
I don't think that the distinction between personal use and distribution, I don't think that's the best distinction to use, because I still think that there must be something specific to the trunk or specific to the hood. And I think that's what Patino makes clear, is that it's not just enough to say that, you know, this is a dealer level. I think you run into problems of, well, what does that mean? I think under the totality, there must be facts that do point to the trunk and or to the hood, like in, you know, Guerra, Lettman, and McCarthy, the cases that have upheld the trunk searches.
Will the nature of the smell become more relevant post-CREMA?
Post-CREMA, Your Honor. I think post-CREMA, you know, the marijuana, smell of marijuana no longer is probable cause to search a vehicle. But, you know, as Mr. Shalom from the ACLU points out in his brief, you know, there are other odorous substances that, you know, I think the same rule would apply, is that the odor has to come from the place to be searched, or totality of circumstances point to the trunk or the hood.
Questions, anyone?
May it please the court. Before I start, Judge Sabatino, if you need a good criminal defense lawyer, let me know.
He doesn't know any.
I have some recommendations. So I wanted to make three points. The first about the rule, the second the standard, the second about how to deal with the credibility question that Judge Sabatino raised, and the third about the dissipation lingering question that you raised, Mr. Chief Justice. But I'll rely on Mr. Howard's presentation as to the third and focus instead on the first two. We know that the founders of this country and of our state constitution thought the particularity requirement to be sufficiently important that it made its way into the Fourth Amendment and Article I, Paragraph 7, that a warrant must particularly describe the place to be searched. That hatred of general searches is no less intense in an exception to the warrant requirement case. It is, in fact, more intense. And so, to answer the fundamental question of what is the rule is that the particularity requirement applies. And that means that in order to get into a place beyond the passenger compartment, there must be probable cause to believe that that is where the contraband will be found. In this case, we've indicated a couple ways that could happen. One is the smell is emanating from a particular area, and that could be done by the trooper, him or herself. It could also be done by a canine. It can be done by indicia like the sagging of the trunk. But there has to be some probable cause to believe that that's where the contraband will be, and it is not sufficient to say, well, I smell it and it wasn't here. So the absence of it being in one place doesn't provide probable cause that it is in the other place. And I think the lingering is one reason for that, but the preference for particularity is another reason for that.
Why is that? Is that because it's a negative inference?
So in my brief, I talk a little bit about the home, right? If there's a warrant to search the home, it doesn't necessarily get you into the garage. You need to have probable cause, and the judge would sign off on that. And that is true also in the context of exceptions to the warrant requirement. So if the hot pursuit exception leads you into the home, it doesn't necessarily get you into the garage, and vice versa. It's because particularity matters. I think the negative inference point you raised, Justice Patterson, is important. It does, and that's what the trial judge in this case was concerned with. How do you combat the negative inference? But ultimately, it's about particularity.
A negative inference is not excluded as a basis for a finding of reasonableness.
I don't disagree, but I think the particularity requirement is what's fundamentally at issue. Is you can't get just anywhere because you think the person might be involved in it. You have to believe that it will be in the place to be searched. And those are distinct places, the passenger compartment, the trunk, and the engine compartment. The question as to
credibility, let me first say that in this case can be decided, as Justice Pierre-Louis pointed out, by your de novo review of the law. The officer testified that it was possible that the smell could emanate from through the air vents from the front of from the engine compartment, and we know from Demeter and Patino that that's not enough. That the mere possibility that something could happen is not the probability that Article 1, Paragraph 7 requires. So that's an easy way to resolve this case. But there is this more general question about how do we deal with credibility determinations. And I have to concede that there was a credibility determination made in this case. The officer was found credible, and that's entitled to the deference under a long line of cases here. But there's guidance that can be given to trial courts, because we now live in a world where lots of things that make up reasonable suspicion or make up probable cause are verifiable. We have body cameras, we have dashboard cameras, we have external surveillance cameras. Lots of things are verifiable, and smell is not. And it is therefore not surprising that it comes up with some regularity, but it needs to be viewed with the skepticism of the fact that it can't be verified. And so that doesn't mean that a judge can't find an officer credible. And even if the judge doesn't ultimately find the contraband, Justice Patterson, I think I don't want to live in a world where the ultimate result is determinative of the appropriateness of the initial search, as your questions were alluding to. But a judge can still find that the officer acted in good faith in finding the smell, but I think the trial courts need to know that when the thing upon which the officer is relying is not subject to verification, it must be viewed with increased skepticism as we determine the credibility of the of that particular determination.
Well, how does that impact, if we phrase it, what's the standard of review?
The standard of review remains the same, deferential to the credibility findings, but you're asking trial courts in making those credibility findings to be more, to be less inclined to find the unverifiable things credible. And that gets really to the Chief Justice's question about the implicit bias and the concerns that come from allowing broad searches based on the smell. And Mr. Howard noted that it goes beyond marijuana, but the truth is, I think it's been long accepted that police officers know the smell of marijuana. There's a long line of cases that says that. I don't know that all police officers know the smell of cocaine or ether or crack. I cited to cases from around the country where officers said they did, but I don't know that the average officer knows what ether smells like, what heroin smells like, what cocaine smells like. And certainly that could be subject to expert qualification and all sorts of things there. But so there are questions about smells, but in general, it's anything that can't be verified should be viewed with more skepticism.
Couldn't that then call into question whether there should be a rule that smell automatically leads to probable cause? Because it seems like it's kind of like a plain smell exception, whereas a plain sight exception is verifiable. The officer sees something and can grab what they see or inspect what they see because what they see is objectively, verifiably there. It seems like plain smell is used somewhat similarly, even though, as you pointed out, it's not objectively verifiable and the officer might be smelling something that is not there. And so should that be a reason to reconsider whether any smell automatically leads to probable cause to search for that smell? Because it might be that the smell is not there. It might be that the smell dissipated. It might be that the officer had just smelled something else and that was triggering something.
Sure.
There's lots of olfactory research about smells. Should we be concerned that it is not the same as plain sight, even though it's sometimes used in a similar way?
Right, and I think the doctrine is the same, and that makes sense, that the fundamental doctrine of plain sight and plain view and plain smell would be the same. But I think you're right that the automatic is the piece that gives me real pause and upon which I think reconsideration is appropriate. Again, that doesn't mean it can't be, but it needs to be viewed with skepticism. And I think to the extent we have cases that say the smell of marijuana automatically triggers a search of the passenger compartment, I think that is subject to revision. But as I noted in my brief and has come up here, we're really only talking about pipeline cases with respect to marijuana. As you were talking, Justice Wiener, after I thought about another kind of non drug case where plain smell might come up, which is in arson investigations, the smell of accelerant. And so, again, I'm not suggesting that smell has no role in this. I am not as familiar with the olfactory research as you might be, Justice Winter-Apter. But I think there might be a role for it. But the idea that smell automatically entitles officers to anything, I think, is a rule that we should be deeply skeptical of.
Same question that Mr. Howard answered. So for the pipeline cases, if the officer testified here or in a different case, I went to the rear of the car and I smelled a strong odor coming that appeared to be emanating from the trunk. Problem with the search?
Like Mr. Howard, I think that would probably be probable cause, assuming the other facts were there. But yes, I think that would probably be enough.
I'm still trying to figure out what a trial judge does during this motion to suppress hearing. He hears the officer testify about smell, and you're suggesting that the judge should receive that with skepticism. What does the judge do after the judge hears that testimony?
So I think there are some follow-up questions that can be asked either by defense counsel or by the court itself. Justice Winter-Apter raised some of them, right? Had you smelled anything before? How familiar are you with the smell of marijuana? Tell me about the difference in the smell in the front of the car and in the rear. Did you check the air vents? Was the smell coming from there? Could it have been something else? And if those questions are answered appropriately, the judge might say, notwithstanding the skepticism with which I received this information, I find you credible. I think you really smelled marijuana, and in this case, it was emanating from the rear, and therefore you had probable cause to search the trunk.
Right. And none of those questions were asked here.
They were not.
What about a remand?
I have real concerns with remands in cases like this because there's a burden of proof. The state bears the burden. It's a warrantless search. They failed to establish what they needed to establish. They don't get another bite at the apple once the court has set forth, well, these are the exact magic words that need to be uttered in order to justify this search. I don't think we should give them the opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. Unless the court has any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schlupp.
Thank you.
Mr. McGuire.
Thank you, Chief Justice Ravner. May it please the court. Given the extensive arguments on the scope of the search, I'm going to limit our arguments to the two proposed rules. And I'd like to start off by addressing your question, Chief Justice, about this lingering smell. The ACDL of New Jersey takes, I think, a bit of a more pessimistic view than some of our colleagues as to this lingering smell that's just been kind of wholesale accepted by trial courts without any type of olfactory expert testimony or anything to indicate that there is training or experience on the part of the officer as to this lingering smell. There was testimony in the record here that he was, you know, exposed to burning marijuana and raw marijuana in the academy, but there's nothing to suggest that they have any specialized training on how long a smell might linger in a car. And so that brings us to our first proposed rule. We're asking the court to adopt a bright line rule in this case. And the rule would be if an officer relies upon an overwhelming smell of marijuana to conduct a warrantless search, if there's no marijuana recovered, any other evidence obtained should be suppressed.
Again, I just ask you whether that kind of concept is ultimately in the interests of the clients whom your organization represents, because it introduces the idea of let's cut to the chase. Let's find out what happened, and then we go back and find that evidentiary. And I do not see this line of cases, which is a pretty narrow circumstances, especially in light of recent legislative developments, as a reason to open the door on that.
Well, Justice Patterson, I think what we have to keep in mind is that marijuana is different and it's been viewed differently. And it's been used to justify these huge searches, you know, wide searches of vehicles.
I understand, but as I understand this rule, if the officer, if a lot of marijuana is found in the trunk, that's evidentiary with respect to the state's having probable cause to have. When probable cause is supposed to be evaluated at the moment of the search, not what happened later. I just think it's thin ice, and it really is. It represents a diversion, or departure from our long-standing law, as I understand it, that you don't look at the ultimately what happened. You don't go to the last page of the book and then go back to the beginning.
And you know, I agree with Mr. Shalom. We don't want to live in a world where the ends necessarily justify the means.
That's exactly what this is about. I understand you want to say in this particular case, no marijuana was found. There couldn't have been probable cause. But it cuts both ways. And it seems to me, you know, you have the expertise in this area of the law. I just read a lot of appeals, and it seems to me that suppression motions come out of situations where something was found, and that opening the door could lead to some changes that would significantly change our law.
And Justice Patterson, I understand the court's concerns. The rule that we proposed is a huge departure from what the court has generally done. What our concern is, and what the defense bar's concern is that police officers have been over-relying on the Witt exception and on the odor of raw marijuana to conduct searches, not only of people who they generally or genuinely rather come across in the you know line of their duty, but also people who are subjects of active investigations.
Your organization argues forcefully in other cases that if contraband is found, that cannot be factored into whether there was probable cause. Is there a tension between that position and the one that you're advocating today?
There is somewhat, you know, frankly, Chief Justice. But what we're proposing is limited to the context of the odor of marijuana. And really, I mean, when we look at searches in other contexts, we have police officers who conduct full-scale investigations, criminal informants, surveillance. They utilize, you know, whatever resources they have at their disposal.
Respectfully, you're saying it's a bigger problem and everything. But, you know, there are some factual distinctions that create distinctions at home versus car, et cetera, in Fourth Amendment law. But what you are saying here, unless I am missing something, clearly has to apply in both directions. It's either found or it's not found. And if, in fact, it is relevant to the probable cause determination to say it was found in the marijuana setting, then I can see no distinction that is meaningful, other than maybe there's not a bigger problem or whatever, but not from a Fourth Amendment analysis perspective, between that and the weapon was found in the glove compartment. So of course there was probable cause because there was a weapon in the glove compartment. You know, I understand that you want a bright line rule that will deal with a particular subset of cases that probably over time will become less and less important, but that's a big change that you're asking the court, and I just candidly think it's surprising to come from the ACDL.
I understand that, Justice Patterson. I think, you know, when we were thinking of what our bright line rule would be, we had in mind the ubiquity of this scent of raw marijuana that is, you know, frankly abused in our opinion. So I understand the court's concerns with our bright line rule. We would like to move on to our second rule now, which has to do with the spontaneity requirement. And what we're proposing is that in cases in which officers do have an ongoing investigation pending, any officer with knowledge of that investigation, and really any officer within that department who is conducting the investigation, should not be able to rely on the Witt exception. Because when there is this pre-existing investigation, and in this case, I understand the investigation was relating to guns, and ultimately the probable cause relates to marijuana. But the whole reason why the state trooper was behind this individual, Mr. Cohen, was because they had this bolo.
And that's not before the court, though. That's not part of the cert grant here.
It's not, Justice. I understand that. But if the court is inclined to address that aspect of this case, which I think is imminently important, I know you guys heard similar arguments in the Smart case. You know, we think that this case presents a perfect opportunity for the court to craft a rule that we proposed.
Are you arguing that the state had probable cause to obtain a warrant based on only the CI information from December of 2015 and January of 2016 in the context of making that argument?
We believe they probably did have probable cause to obtain a warrant based on the amount of detail that was provided by the criminal informant, dates of travel, the color and make of the vehicle, license plate, These are all factors that this court has previously held were certainly probable cause to obtain a warrant.
And that they sat on that and instead searched the car.
Exactly. And really what we're arguing is that this is a dangerously convenient way for officers who are conducting an investigation to kind of sidestep the warrant requirement. And for that reason, we're asking the court to consider, although I realize, Justice Patterson, that it's not before the court, the court could and should, in our opinion, adopt our proposed rule.
Thank you, Mr. McGuire.
Thank you.
Ms. Hunt.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I want to begin by responding to some of the points that have been raised thus far. And the first one is that there's no real need or basis here for adopting a new standard when we're talking about assessing the permissible scope of a search. The rule is and should remain, as it always has been, that the permissible scope is defined by the object of the search and the places where there's probable cause to believe that it may be found. And I think that really what this case comes down to is a disagreement as to exactly, that second part and what it means to have probable cause relating to a specific area. And we agree that the scope of a search can only include the areas where there's probable cause to think that the object can be found. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that officers have to have probable cause specific to each individual area of a vehicle. It doesn't mean that there has to be probable cause for, it doesn't necessarily mean these things. Obviously, cases are different. Probable cause is a very fact-specific determination. But to insist on probable cause that is specific to a glove compartment, to a center console, to a trunk, to an engine compartment, and not recognize that there can be probable cause generally for a vehicle, and that this can allow officers to search any area where that object may be found. And that's the object that may be found is really what defines that scope. So if you're looking for, if you're looking for a long rifle, you probably can't search in the glove compartment. You probably can't search in the console unless for some reason they're big enough to do so. But to say that there has to be, specific to the context of odor, that it has to be pinpointed to a specific area of a vehicle, I think is inconsistent with the recognition that marijuana can be found in many different places in the smallest areas of a vehicle. And also with the with the understanding that odors can't be pinpointed in the same way and assessed in the same way that other types of evidence may be. I want to address the particularity argument specifically that was discussed by the ACLU. And the particularity requirement can be satisfied by the car generally. It doesn't require, it shouldn't require in most instances, particularity with respect to each specific area of a vehicle. This would be relatively similar to requiring particularity with respect to each closet in a given room. There may be instances where probable cause is limited to a specific closet, where it's limited to a specific area of a vehicle. But there are also instances, like in this case, where the probable cause isn't limited to one specific area and is more general, but still particularized to that area, to that room, to that vehicle, to that house. And I think to require otherwise would kind of misconstrue the particularity requirement generally. As for the idea that odors can linger, that's true. We recognize that odors can linger, but probable cause doesn't require an absolute certainty that marijuana is going to be found or that the source of an odor is going to be found in that specific place. Probable cause requires a fair probability that it's going to be found. And like in this case, when you have a very strong odor of raw marijuana, there's a fair probability that raw marijuana is going to be found in that vehicle. And just 2 points about the record to respond to defendant's argument. Obviously, it's true that this case was primarily about smell. There were other indications of the presence of marijuana in the vehicle, There's the shake on the defendant's beard. There's the multiple air fresheners, defendant's nervousness. But this, we recognize that this was kind of primarily about smell. But that also has to be considered in context. This wasn't, oh, the officer just smelled it and then kind of ran wild searching throughout the entire car. The smell continued after the passenger and the driver were removed from the vehicle, and it continued after nothing was found in the passenger compartment. As the judge found, the officer continued to express confusion as to why he couldn't find this source, even after he found the guns in the engine compartment. Even after searching the engine compartment and finding the two guns, he still said, I don't understand why I'm not smelling this, and that's why he went on to search the trunk. So this idea that the search kind of all of a sudden cut off right after the guns were found is just not consistent with the record. And finally, the idea that all of the signs here pointed to personal use, that's both not the case, and also I think the significance of that is overstated. First, it's simply not the case that all of the indications were of personal use. There was a strong smell of raw marijuana here. So that's not specific to personal use. And even so, there was no lawful personal use at the time. The driver and the passenger were both asked if they were medical marijuana users. They both said that they were not. There was no lawful personal use here. So even being consistent with personal use, that is still a crime, or was at the time. And finally, my final point just in response, when we're talking about credibility findings relating to odor, they're no different than any other credibility finding that a judge should make. And the process for making that determination shouldn't be any different. Credibility determinations are fact-specific, and our judges have made them, they make them probably dozens of times a day. They are well-trained to make these determinations. They look at all of the circumstances in front of them, the testimony of the officer, their behavior while they're testifying, whether there's any other indication in the record that kind of supports what they're testifying to. And here, that was the MBR and the officer's expressions on the MBR that he was confused that he wasn't finding it, that there was another officer who also smelled the marijuana here. So to suggest that there should be a special rule or a special guidance for credibility determinations when it comes to odor, I think our judges are perfectly well qualified to make those determinations, and they can do so based on everything in front of them. So there is no need to have a specific rule as it relates to the odor of marijuana.
Counsel, you stated that odors can't necessarily be pinpointed. Isn't that the point of getting a canine sniff? In this case, if the real focus of the search was the marijuana smell, wouldn't the next logical step have been to call for a canine sniff after having the passengers exit, after searching their persons, not finding any marijuana on them, and not finding any marijuana in the interior?
Well, I think canine sniffs may pose the same issue in that when you're talking about a vehicle, the odors travel throughout the vehicle. So where a canine alerts to may not be the specific area of the vehicle where it's found. It may be. I think it's hard to say that without having specific facts in front of you, but
getting a canine sniff generally would indicate whether the dog is hitting on the car for marijuana, period.
Absolutely, but I think that's no different here than really having the officer recognize it or testify to his recognition of the odor of marijuana. The officer is trained to recognize that smell.
So you're equating the officer saying that he smells marijuana as the same as a dog that's trained to detect the presence of marijuana hitting on the car? Is that the same?
Kind of, yes, actually. I mean, not necessarily. There are obviously differences. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
When you seek search warrants in these scenarios, do you just indicate that the officer smelled, or do you indicate that the dog, you seek a search warrant after the dog has hit on the car?
Absolutely. I recognize that canines are certainly supportive and add that extra kind of layer of proof. But I don't think that's necessary when you have an officer who's properly trained, who can testify to his experience and his training about recognizing this smell, who can testify to how he smelled it and how strong it was. We could have a canine officer come in and, well, I guess not the dog, but the officer come in and, and back up the original officer's testimony. But it's not necessary when you have an officer who can testify to his personal observations.
Right, but in the case...
Please, go ahead.
Sorry. But in a case like this where we're talking about the scope of the search, so certainly no one's disputing that the officer had the ability to search the interior, but here we're talking about expanding the scope to other areas of the car. And in this case, there aren't those additional facts that have been discussed in the other cases, in the other cases that we've discussed today in Guerra and Kylon. There aren't those other facts. So in that circumstance, are you suggesting that an officer just smelling marijuana, raw marijuana, can just automatically search the entire car?
Well, I don't think it's, I guess I would kind of disagree with the fact that there are no other circumstances here. It's true that the search began based on the smell of marijuana emanating from the interior of the vehicle, but I think the significance of the smell evolved throughout the search in that there was a thorough search of the passenger compartment. The officer testified that they went from one side to the other. They searched all of those areas, and it wasn't found. And yet he still smelled this strong odor. So it's not, it wasn't just that initial smell that the officer explained was why he searched the entire vehicle, including the engine compartment and the trunk. It was
also... Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because it seems like now there's a factual dispute as to whether or not there was a thorough search of the passenger compartment, because counsel for the defendant has said that there was no thorough search of the passenger compartment, and it was just a smell and then...
I think that's inconsistent with the record. If specifically, the officer discussed this in 1T, around page 122, how he searched from one side to the other. And we know that the officer searched the glove compartment because that's where he found the shot glass with the spent shell casing. And his testimony that they did a thorough search of the interior of a vehicle. So to say that it was just he opened the door, smelled raw marijuana, and then went right to the engine compartment, I think is not supported by the officer's testimony or the judge's fact findings.
Can I take you back to the questions about the canine from Justice Pierre-Louis? And I'm going to preface this by saying you don't have to take a position and answer this question, but it made me wonder about the impact of CREMA of 2C35-10C. Going forward, the smell of cannabis, the smell of or burnt cannabis cannot form a basis for reasonable articulable suspicion. Canines base their conclusion on smell. Is there an effect on canines from this statute?
That's not something that I think we can take a position on right now. I think we can recognize that the use of odor will obviously change with CREMA. But 10C does talk about the odor alone. So depending on if there's other circumstances, that may be different. And beyond that, I think it's something that I'll have to develop in a specific case.
For another day, then.
Yes.
As to the basis for smell, the officer testified repeatedly, I smelled a strong odor, and also testified about how marijuana can fit in the engine compartment and get sucked into the air vents. Any support for that, statement?
Yeah, so he goes on... He is cut off mid-sentence, but he says I've seen in other, I have the language right in front of me. He says I've seen in other cases, and then he gets cut off by an objection as to what he's done in the past. And after some discussion, the judge essentially said the prosecutor could continue down that line, but the answer wasn't going to have much of an impact on his analysis, so the prosecutor dropped it at that point. But I think even just what's there, the acknowledgement that and his knowledge that marijuana can get sucked into the air vent and his reference to his past experience, I think that is sufficient to explain his basis of knowledge for that and that he has seen this before.
And that go too far? The air vent theory could theoretically justify a search of the engine compartment in every case then.
I'm going to say potentially, but I want to explain that. I mean, I think what you have in this case is a very good example of reasonable actions taken by the officer and taking the next logical step at every point. So he smelled it coming from the interior of the vehicle. He searched, did a thorough search of the interior, and only then did he move on to the engine compartment. So while there may be cases where the probable cause is specific to the engine compartment first, you know, if the officer is able to pinpoint the smell coming from the engine compartment because it's so overwhelming, that may be a different case. But I think certainly in this case, the officer took the next logical step. He made sure that it wasn't in the interior passenger compartment, and then moved on to the engine compartment. And then when it wasn't found there, moved on to the trunk. So there may be cases where that expansion into the engine compartment isn't justified just based on smell. But it's hard to say, because it's such a fact-specific inquiry, it's hard to say exactly where that line might be drawn.
In this case, can we rely on it in light of the testimony that we have?
Absolutely. In this case, absolutely.
The air vent theory, without even knowing whether the fan was on or more than that short bit of testimony?
Yes, because even without knowing whether the fan was on, it's the awareness that air circulates throughout the vehicle through the air vents. So whether or not the fan was on specifically takes a probable cause finding beyond the actual standard for probable cause. I think to recognize that there is a fair, that given that the smell can travel, and in this case it wasn't found in the passenger compartment, that there is a fair probability that it will be found where the air vents start, I guess, so in the engine compartment. In this case, absolutely, especially given the officer's testimony, given the how the search progressed, there is absolutely probable cause here specific to the engine compartment.
Do you agree there's a difference between a plain smell versus plain sight exception, in that plain sight, it's objectively verifiable that whatever the officer is seeing is there, whereas plain smell, the officer might not be smelling it, the smell might have emanated from somewhere else, et cetera. What should we do about those concerns?
I would recognize that there can be some distinction there, in that smell cannot be captured on a body cam in the same way. It cannot be captured on an MVC in the same way. But you do have an officer who can testify to his smell and to how he recognized it and why he was able to recognize it. And then you have a judge who's able to assess his credibility as to that, based on not just what he testifies to, but all the other circumstances that may support or fail to support his claim of an odor.
I'd like to come back for a moment to how extensive the officer's search of the interior passenger compartment has to be in order to be reasonable. The United States Supreme Court in Ross said, we shouldn't get into these nice distinctions, but perhaps they're important here, because the defense attorney started out telling us that, you know, the officer didn't do more than just sort of look around at what was in plain sight or plain view, and didn't look perhaps under the seats or in the cushions. So to be reasonable in order to justify a further search, how far should the officer be expected to go other than poking a head in, looking around, and not seeing something in plain sight?
I think it's tough to say, again, because that's very much going to depend on the circumstances. But here we do have the officer's testimony that he did a thorough search. We do know that he searched the standard compartments within the interior, so the glove box, the console, the center console. So it's possible that there may be a case where, you know, a cursory glance is insufficient. But depending on if there are additional circumstances in that case, it's possible that a cursory glance could be enough. So it's very hard to say, and I know that's a frustrating answer, and I apologize, but I think, sorry, one more kind of response I wanted to make to that is the idea that the search of an engine compartment it's not a separate search in the same way. It's the same search of a different part of the vehicle. It's like going into one closet and then another closet. I think it's not necessarily its own distinct search in that kind
of way. About a trunk, though, isn't that a place where there's a higher expectation that you're going to store personal things there? And should we extend this to the trunk as contrasted with the engine?
I think it's actually quite the opposite. I would suggest that the engine compartment has an even lower expectation of privacy than the trunk.
Yeah, that's what I was suggesting.
Yes.
Yeah, in order for the officer to go into the trunk, You have to bring in the canine unit because that's where people expect to have some higher degree of privacy.
Right, and the engine compartment is an area where personal items aren't expected to be stored. It's a more heavily regulated area, I guess I would say, in that you have mechanics going through there. You have state inspection requirements. There are all of these factors that suggest that an engine compartment certainly is not, or a search of an engine compartment is certainly not as invasive. Or doesn't implicate that kind of extra level of privacy that one might expect in their trunk.
So are there going to be different expectations of privacy for those who drive electric vehicles and those who don't?
No, I don't want to say that, obviously. But and again, this is a kind of a fact specific situation. I don't have an electric vehicle, so I can't say exactly how they're laid out. But if it's the case that that under the hood is just a second trunk, then it is more similar to kind of the standard back trunk. But if you have a case like this where you have a standard engine compartment, then that same concern doesn't arise. And I think that's kind of a case for another day.
So is your argument more that the entire car can be searched as part of one particularized search of the car, but you don't need specific probable cause to get into the trunk or to get into the engine? Or is your argument that in prior cases, the odor of raw marijuana emanating from the car and an inability to find it in the passenger compartment itself constituted probable cause to search the trunk, or in theory, the trunk or the hood? Or is it both of those or neither of those?
It's kind of both of those. I think, it depends on the facts. I think where you have a generalized smell coming from the vehicle, it's probable cause for the vehicle as a whole. If somehow you are able to pinpoint the smell only to the interior or only to the glove compartment or only to some very specific area, then your probable cause may be more limited to that one area, and expanding beyond that may require more. There may be cases where the probable cause starts with the trunk or starts with the engine compartment and isn't more generalized to begin with. But in this case, whether we evaluate it as probable cause being for the vehicle as a whole, which I think is most consistent with precedent recognizing that you can search anywhere in the vehicle that the object might be found. So whether we're looking at a more general probable cause or probable cause specific to the interior and the failure to find it there being probable cause for the other areas, I think in either event, in this case, there was probable cause for each of the areas.
And do you agree with your friends on the other side that there, in every other case, it was the failure to find the marijuana in the passenger compartment plus something else? So defendant and amici have argued that in Guerra and Colon and in every other case, there was something specifically to point to the trunk. The trunk was riding low, or the odor was emanating from the back of the car. In each case, there was some other factor. Here, there is no other factor. Do you agree with that in terms of all of the other cases?
Not necessarily. Not entirely. I think in those cases, those additional factors provided additional support, but because they were present, there was no need to analyze what would have happened in their absence. So it's hard to say, for most of them at least, that the search wouldn't have been okay had there not been those additional factors. I recognize that they were present in those cases. But I think the inability to find it in the passenger compartment after a thorough search would, in this case, I believe, like it would in those other cases as well, have justified expanding the scope of the search.
Questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add?
No, that's all. If your honors have no questions about the statutory language or the ACDL's proposed rules, then the state is satisfied. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you to all counsel for the helpful arguments. We'll take the matter.